the film with three brains. It's 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 the film with three brains.
Oh my god, you guys are freaks.
Hello, and welcome to the film with three brains. This is Sean in Chicago.
And Cohen from Maplewood, New Jersey.
And Sam from San Francisco.
Today we are going to review the movie Let It Ride from 1989, starring Richard Dreyfuss of Jaws fame and many, many others. But this is a movie about a hard luck gambler that has an amazing day. And of course, if you have anything, any knowledge of gambling, you know that Let It Ride means to put it all back out there. But also it kind of means to let it all hang out and to kind of whatever, go for it, I guess. That's pretty much, it's based on a novel, Good Vibes by Jay Cronley. It's just about an amazing day that he has at the track. And he is a cab driver that comes across some inside information. His buddy picks up a random conversation, which turns into a great opportunity for him to get kind of a sure thing. But even a sure thing, as they say, you just never know. That's the general synopsis, is that he has a great day at the track and a lot of shenanigans happen. It starts with him trying to restart his marriage. He's married to Terry Garr, and they're at a Chinese restaurant and they kind of laying out the, what's going to happen. You know, they're repledging themselves to the marriage, I guess. And one of the things he is supposed to do is not gamble. So that goes down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So do you want to do some first impressions, or what would you like to start with here?
I'll start if you.
Yeah, sure.
I remember seeing this when it came out and really liking it. I couldn't remember the movie itself at all. It was like watching it for the first time, but I do remember that I enjoyed it and I thought it was funny as hell. Now after seeing it again, you know, so many years later, it has its charms, of course, I would say. I mean, Richard Dreyfuss he's a great actor. And it has moments that made me smile. It's not as funny as I remember it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I felt like it was a little flat. But I wasn't bored while watching it. I wasn't thinking, God, this is terrible. It's nothing like that. I just had fonder memories of it.
Yeah,
my memory of it is perhaps embellished, you know.
I saw it first at Mike Thornton's house.
Oh yeah.
With his, you know, his notebook catalog of VHS tapes.
Yeah. Oh, that's remember that? Right. I forgot about that.
You know, so you could just go down. I don't know if it's alphabetized or just numbers, but I mean, I remember like looking it up and we're like, hey, let's see that. You haven't seen that?
They dubbed everything. They had two VHS decks.
Yeah.
Yes. I watched.
And it must have been before copy protection.
Yeah.
I remember I walked into his house and they were just starting the movie there. I'm like, what are you watching? They're like, Let It Ride. And they're like, I've never seen it. They're like, oh, you have to see it. We watched it like 10 times. And so that's where I first saw it.
It must be where I first saw it then. It must have.
Yeah. I thought it's still a cute movie. I agree with you. It's not a hilarious movie, but if there's any drawback at the beginning, is that Richard Dreyfuss is not like the most admirable of characters. Like, it's hard to like him right at the beginning.
I think they
could have softened him up a little bit and it would have made it better, because the movie just, you end up liking him as the movie goes along, because he's doing a good job acting and because of what he's doing, you know, his character's going through. But I think they kind of lose the audience at the beginning in a way that they didn't have to. It's kind of, to me, it reminded me of watching the clips of Toy Story before Toy Story became Toy Story, and you see the original Tom Hanks is kind of a grumpier cowboy than what he ends up as.
Yeah.
And then they make it, they say, oh no, you got to soften him up. And they could have done the same thing for this. And they had had a movie that went from being a cute movie to being a really high quality movie. I think it was still enjoyable. I love to go back and watch it. I'm really happy that you chose this movie because I haven't seen it since the 1980s and I still enjoyed it. But that was one of the things that stuck out that I was like, oh, he's kind of a creep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't really have a normal character arc. I mean, you could even argue that he doesn't really progress or change in the way you expect a character to do. But I mean, in the start, do you want to describe
him? I was just going to say it's sort of the opposite. He learns all the wrong lessons. He sort of regresses. And then his wife is like, okay, well, you won, so it's fine.
Yeah. Well, he accuses her of that because he's like, you know, it's not my losing. It's not my gambling. It's my losing.
Yeah. Right.
That's interesting. But I mean, the very beginning, and this is something I watched it again maybe a year ago, which made me think of it again, and then watching it again. The idea of Let It Ride, he's in the toilet. He's praying on a toilet seat to God, I guess, and which, you know, God doesn't really like me, and he just wants one day, and he's like, I don't really belong here with these guys. I belong in the jockey club, and just, you know, I just want one day. But the Let It Ride, so he said, I'm due, and then somebody in the background says, so's Jesus, and then, but that's not even it. It's right after, you have to listen, I listened to this twice, because I was like, this can't be the genesis of this idea, but then there's another guy says, hey, there's no soap. And then, the guy says, let it ride. So it's about not washing your hands.
After kneeling in front of a public toilet, that's just gross. He's kneeling in front of his face, his hands are all over it. You're like, dude, come on.
In a bar.
Yes, in a CD bar across from a racetrack.
Right, an OTB bar of all things. Like. Yeah. Could he just like stand in the stall? Did he have to kneel in front of the toilet? Oh, that's gross.
I mean, we might come back to the idea of God and fate. I'm sure we will, because that's part of it. But I mean, it's really about a lovable loser and an underdog, I guess.
Yeah. And he does that well. Richard Dreyfuss does that really well. The things I like most about it were because of him.
Yeah.
You know, like his performance. He's just, you know, he's got great comic timing. He's likable even when he's being sort of a rapscallion of sorts, you know. I don't know. There's a reason he's had such a long, you know, and pretty successful career. I mean, he's a really good actor. And I think maybe they don't, but I think that his comedy gets overlooked a little bit because he was in Jaws and so good in it, and he was in Close Encounters and so good in it. You know, you forget about movies like this and even Stakeout.
Yeah.
Stakeout.
Yeah, where he's basically playing the same character but as a cop.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's very lucky in that as well. You know, he falls into this weird relationship when he really has no business at all having a relationship with his. But yeah, I mean, that was the time of, you know, I remember watching Stakeout and loving him and Emilio Estevez, and then him in this. Yeah, he really is kind of really harsh, but driven. I mean, to kind of have his moment, you know, and and be ready for. I mean, he kind of doubting it. I think what's one thing that's interesting. So, I mean, we won't give out the whole movie away, but I mean, obviously, he goes on a winning streak, and part of that winning streak is to. Keep putting that money back out there. But the moment that I think convinces him that it's really, really going to happen, or it's a special day, is when he tries to bet the favorite and can't get to the window.
Yeah. That's great.
It's a great scene, but
yeah.
And I think, do you remember why he's arrested even? Is it?
He's got the pass to get into the jockey club from the guy who gave him the tip. So he's using someone else's pass to get in the jockey club. So it's a mistaken identity thing, and that's why they
arrest him, because they think he's someone else, basically.
Yeah, Right. I think that's, I don't want to pick the movie apart too much, but I will. So I think that that's the weirdest thing about this movie is that he has this like divine great day, but starts off as a tip from two guys who somehow rigged a race. Like, it just seems like that's not divine. That's like you overheard. Yeah. Some crooks, yeah. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah. Right.
Like it seems that's a weird first step into divine intervention.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, it's sort of like thematically, it's two clashing ideas.
Yeah.
One is that it starts off as sort of, you almost like if you're watching this for the first time, you might think that these two guys are mobsters maybe or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And then when he goes to talk to them, you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
He goes to thank them. Oh, by the way, I have this tape of you. And, it, you know, watching this first time, you might think it's going to start getting a little Tarantino up in this place. You know, like they're going to, you know, trying to have him killed or something, which they don't. But then you're right. Then it becomes this sort of like this strange sort of divine day in this man's life where, you know, he's being touched for whatever reason. He clearly hasn't earned it. Did somehow like I didn't really it while I was watching it, I didn't think, oh, that's weird, or I didn't think that's not working for me. It was fine.
Yeah. Well, I think the foil is David Johansen, his buddy.
Right.
Who doesn't get it or doesn't take those chances. You know, he's the unluckiest person in the world, you know, and that's the thing, is that he had the tape. He goes ape shit on him. He's like, yeah, you had it. You were the one that had it. And he's just yelling at him because you have this opportunity. You didn't even, not only did you not take it, but then you refused. You kept refusing it. He kept refusing that opportunity, which apparently if you're a habitual gambler, that's the exact thing you're looking for over and over. And he doesn't look. And then he bets $500 on the Packers, you know, back when the Packers were terrible. So it's a perfect like, oh, yeah, yeah, that was a really dumb thing to do.
Just so our listeners know, all three of us are born and raised in Wisconsin. So Packers are in our blood.
They're playing right now. I hope they're winning. But yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think he is a good character, but I think there are moments. I think it's very subtle that, whether they intended it this way or not, that he makes these choices that have effect on his fate, or if you want to call it chance or superstition. Like, so
like,
go ahead.
No, sorry. I didn't want to cut you off because it's slight subject change. So go.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing he promises his wife, he's going to stop drinking. So, as they're waiting for the first photo finish, which he's just driving, he's just going out of his mind waiting. And David Johansen comes out. He's like, "Here, have some nice beer." And he's like, "I gave up drinking." And then, as the movie progresses, he's always ordering drinks, but he's not actually drinking them. He never actually breaks that promise very much. He has a sip at some point.
I didn't notice that.
Actually, when he does take a sip, that's when he's in the jogging club. That's when his wife calls him, and that's when he has that bad moment of picking the wrong horse, which gets derailed. Blah, blah, blah. But I mean, so like it kind of follows his decision making he has and what he chooses to listen to. And one of the things, so he gets the fortune cookie right away, which says you might be walking around lucky and not even know it.
Right.
And then the waitress, which I thought was a cool touch, that she's like, you know, she's the waitress friend, but she also like, there's a steam coming off the grill, and it's like the Oracle of Delphi or something. Like, you know, she says the same thing as the fortune cookie. So he's like, oh man, something's going on here. So it's all those things, you know,
I love that the opening scene, they inadvertently cause an entire restaurant of people to get into this massive argument about how it works with this fortune cookies.
It's great. I have strong feelings about it myself. I don't know what you guys think.
You take the one you touch. You don't touch them all.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I have nothing. All of that was new to me. I don't know anything about fortune cookies.
I'm in the camp of I have to eat the cookie before I read the fortune. That's me.
What I used to do is break it open, read the fortune, and leave the cookie because I never really cared for them.
Right.
That's all wrong.
But yeah, I mean, that's
why my life is always shit.
Yeah. That's why you'll never have this happen to you.
Right. I'll never win big at a horse track.
Nope.
Yeah, but there's a search for meaning in the whole thing. And it's like kind of frivolous, kind of, you know, it's seedy, but But to him, it's everything. I mean, he thinks his entire life is going to get straightened out by this day. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, does it?
Well, we don't know for sure, but it certainly seems that way. Because, I mean, we're led to believe that the only problem he has right now, other than wife issues, which you know, marriage issues, which get sorted out apparently by the end, is that it's money. And he ends up winning a shitload. We don't know exactly how much, I don't think, because his last bet, the last one he bet was $69,000, and he wins.
Yeah.
8 to 1.
It was 8 to 1.
It was 8 to 1. Okay. So, yeah. What, 500 some odd thousand dollars? That's a lot.
There's a lot of math, and one of the things I like is how it goes from his voiceover, and then people answer his voiceover in real life.
Yeah,
I like that touch. I don't know what.
Yeah, and he broke the fourth wall once too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He looked right at the camera. Yeah.
I think when Jennifer Tilly was sort of propositioning him, am I having a great day or what?
I think that if, you know, taking an adult look at this movie and thinking about gambling addicts, that this movie covers so much of what it is to be a gambling addict in their life, their personal relationship, that dream for the day I win big, I'm done. Like, and which is really what he was doing. He was.
Yeah.
I think that they purposefully made a whole bunch of things turn ugly during the day to show him that you don't really belong here. You know, even when he gets to the, people didn't like him when he was winning, even his close friends. And then he gets to go to the jockey club, to the upper level. He wins there, and everybody turns their head away from him.
And I also related to that. Yeah, related to that though, also, you know, he's at the OTB bar, he's in the bathroom, he's like, I cannot be one of these losers, right? He's like, this can't be me. And then later, he's finally in the jockey club, and honestly, those people are kind of fucking deadbeats too.
Yeah, that's the point.
You know, they're right.
He doesn't belong anywhere there.
They can afford to be in the jockey club, but they're still like gambling addicts. They're still kind of, one woman, how often she comes there? She says every day. Right. And he's like, oh my God, every day? Even he's appalled.
Do you know who that woman is in that scene?
No, I don't.
Michelle Phillips.
Thing. Yes.
She was in the Mamas and the Papas.
Correct. Yes.
Oh, Michelle Phillips.
She had She had one of the best lines in the movie. It's subtle because he's like, "May I buy you a drink?" And she's like, "I don't see why not. I'm on the pill." And you have to listen to it. You have to be like, "Wait." And you, as a kid, I never would have understood what that meant or anything. But it's like, you know, there's.
Do you guys speaking of casting? So there's a couple things, but one, the guy who played Jennifer Tilly's not husband. What's Bernie? He from? Yeah, Bernie. Bernie.
Boy.
Which made me think of Weekend at Bernie's over and over. Every time she said Bernie, I'm like, but anyway, the actor looks familiar to me. Like, I know I've seen him something, and I didn't bother to look him up, but I was wondering if you guys recognized him.
I don't think so.
No?
Well, now I gotta look it up.
Yeah, we'll let you look that up. But I mean, that whole, well, as far as cameos, I liked the one of the bookie guys, I guess his name is Richard Edson.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's from he's the valet.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off, right?
Right.
They says, what is that? Wait, am I confusing two movies? In Ferris Bueller's Off, do they say, do you speak English? And he says, what country do you think this
that's
is?
That's it.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
I recognize him.
This is crazy shoes. And he has a good line too, which is kind of silly, buddy. he's got the security guard. He's like, shoot anyone on site. And then his buddy jumps out and he almost shoots him. And then that guy comes up and they're explaining it all. And the Richard Edson character goes, I don't like you one fuck. Just out of nowhere. Like, okay. it's like something Tom would say, you know,
right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so there's some fun little cameos. Jennifer Tilly, I don't know if this is one of the first movies she's been in, but
she's really young. It had to have been.
Yeah.
Had to have been.
Early days, yeah.
I like the ticket seller. It's Robbie Coltrane, who's.
All the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, it's Hagrid.
Yeah.
So as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, it's him.
I sort of enjoyed the evolution of the ticket seller, where at first he's just like kind of like every time Richard Dreyfuss go, he'd be like, "Fuck you, dude," whatever. He just didn't like him, and we don't, you know, for whatever reason. Then slowly he's like, "You're the best."
Yeah, at the beginning he's checking his money, his $50 bill, because
yeah, he's just like, "Get out of here, you deadbeat." And then he's like, "Oh my god, I love you. You're my hero."
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a few people he kind of wins over that way. Gets the security guard, kind of goes along with him. He's being paid, but I mean, yeah, just people that don't really aren't related to him, he kind of picks up on along the way. And then, like you said, like he doesn't really belong. He goes back. He tells everyone, he gets everybody. They're all excited. He's back. And he's like, "We're going to put it all our money together and we're going to bet it together." And then they're all like, "Oh yeah."
I figured out who the guy is.
What's that?
Jennifer Tilly's boyfriend.
Oh yeah. Who?
He's the chief of police in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
His name's Harold Lutz in that movie. That's what I recognize him from.
What's the actor's name?
The actor's name is Alan Garfield.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, he's like, "Oh, you know, you might have mentioned..."
Right.
Like the four horse. And then, so everybody's kind of getting on him for various reasons.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he only gets through by sticking to his guns, kind of.
Oh, and one of the other little casting tidbits is that Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City.
Yep.
Plays I guess we're led to believe that perhaps she's a teenager because she's wearing braces. I don't
know. She's 19.
In a small role at the OTB bar.
Yeah. And they're all rooting for him by the end. Like they're like, "I don't care. I don't care about the money. Let him have it." And yeah, so it's either you do or you go along with everybody else and you like the guy and you want him to see him succeed, or you're just like, "Eh." But I mean, you do, because I mean, who else? What else do we care about in this movie other than him winning, having his big day, and kind of getting through? You know.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, Sean, when we first started, you mentioned that it was a book called Good Vibes by Jay Cronley. And I'd never heard of him. So I looked him up real quick, and I thought it was interesting that he wrote the books that Funny Farm and Quick Change were both based on, which are also movies that I have very fond memories of as being very, very funny, but I have not seen since basically they came out.
Yeah.
I mean, Quick Change has Bill Murray in it. So, of course, I got to imagine it's still holds up. Funny Farm, I always, with Chevy Chase, I remember as being really, 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 really funny.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I liked it at all.
Really?
I saw it in the theater, and I think it probably soured me on it.
God, I can't remember
there's
at
just,
all.
You know what it is? The only thing I remember specifically about it is there's this one scene in the beginning where they're trying to go find the house they just bought, and they see an old guy sitting on the front porch at a gas station. He pulls up, he rolls down the window, and he says, "Hey, Mac, do you know the way to this street?" And the guy goes, "How did you know my name was Mac?" He looks kind of weird. He goes, "Oh, I don't know. I just guessed." And the guy goes, "Well, why don't you guess your way to that street?" For some reason, that always struck me as really funny.
The one thing I remember liking about that movie was that he gets this golden retriever dog and takes off immediately. And then an hour later, it runs through their yard and he says, "Hi, Lucky." And then the dog keeps running. He never sees him again. That's it. That's
I don't remember that at all. Oh, I don't know how you can. And if I go back and watch any Chevy Chase movie, it's always Fletch. That's my go-to movie for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So also, I mean, we should talk about the director a little bit. Joe Pitka. Is that how you say his name?
Oh yeah. Pitka. Yeah. Talk about him.
Well, he's a commercial director. I don't think he works much anymore. I think he's semi-retired or retired. This is the only feature film he ever directed outside of Space Jam, which is really a giant commercial in itself anyway. But Joe Pitka is a sort of a legendary commercial director, music video director too, but commercials in particular. They used to call him the King of Cannes because Cannes is in France is where they have it's one of the bigger sort of commercial awards thing. And he's won so many awards over his career that, you know, that's what they call him. But he's directed, he's top tier commercial director, Pepsi.
He has Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah, Super Bowl commercials, totally. Yeah. And that's his deal. And he's also notorious for being a total diva. You know, just like a complete egomaniac. weird demands on sets, things like that. But yeah, so Let It Ride is the only feature film he ever directed, I believe, until Space Jam, and then after that, nothing.
Well, so I wonder. I mean,
a lot of Britney Spears videos and weird shit like that, you know.
Yeah, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson,
right? Yeah.
Did over 80 Super Bowl commercials, but most notably,
That's incredible.
But the one thing that sticks out to me that he did, which we saw all through the late 80s, is that he directed the "This Is Your Brain on Drugs" commercial.
Yeah.
Egg cracking.
If you really dive, do a deep dive on his career, he's directed some really iconic stuff, commercial wise. I mean, you know, for whatever that's worth. But yeah, the Brain on Drugs one is really very famous, of course. And yeah, a bunch of other stuff.
That's great.
I'm curious. I wonder why he never. I don't know. Was Let It Ride a big failure at the box office? I don't really know.
It was.
It was.
The movie was made for $18 million, I think it was, and it made like five at the theaters.
Yeah, good.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess. I suppose that makes sense that no one would let him direct another movie until Space Jam comes along, which is just a, you know, 90-minute commercial. So they're like, oh, of course it should be this guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the screenwriter was Nancy Dowd, but it's credited as Ernest Wharton. And I looked at her.
Meaning she wanted her name removed?
Yeah, I don't know, but she's done that a couple of times. Usually she changed it to a man's name, so I'm assuming that might be an industry.
Oh, maybe it's misogyny a pen name?
Pen name kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, it says credited as Ernest Wharton.
So I found a thing that said that it didn't have a source, but I found the thing that she asked to have her name removed and put that one in there instead. And which I don't know why, because the intonation was that she didn't want to be associated with it, which I don't know, seems weird to me. This is a movie where talking about how time is favorable or not favorable to movies, and you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 30%, you know, review by the critics, because there's only 10 critic reviews, but then the audience review is 75%. So enough people who like it, you know, reviewed it, but the reviews were by the critics were not good. They're pretty harsh on it, which I disagree with. I'm more with the audience up at the 75%. I think this is a lot more fun than a lot of other movies. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, moves fast too.
Yeah, it does. I was just looking at, regressing slightly at Nancy Dowd's sort of, her resume here. And I'd just like to point out that she wrote Slapshot, which I love. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen Slapshot, the hockey movie with
the Hanson brothers,
Paul Newman?
I don't know if I've ever seen that. I probably have, but I can't recall.
You should check it out. She's also uncredited writer on Ordinary People, which is fantastic.
Oh wow.
And in Cloak and Dagger, which is a movie from our youth that I always loved.
Yeah, that one will probably show up on our list at some point. I've wondered about that movie. I have a feeling it's not gonna hold up.
Right, I have such fond memories of it.
is that the guy from E.T., the kid from E.T.?
Yeah,
I think it is.
Okay. Henry Thomas and Dabney Coleman.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Is it Henry Thomas? It is Henry Thomas, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's definitely Dabney Coleman.
Yeah, it is. It's Henry Thomas.
Yeah. Why would she not want to be associated with Ordinary People? That's great.
Well, it just says uncredited. That doesn't. Okay. I mean, it is just done like a rewrite on it or something. They didn't.
Oh, right. Sure.
I don't know.
But, yeah. So he wins people over. Like, one of the characters I like is Tony Cheeseburger, like, with all the gold chains. He's kind of a scene stealer on his own.
And you know who that is. Do you recognize him?
No, I was wondering.
Dude, he's Ufarging Ice Hole from Johnny Dangerously.
Johnny Dangerously.
These bastages.
These Fargan bastages.
That's the guy.
That's funny.
Yeah, he gives him crap for getting in the $50 you know, the four horse. Who do you like? The four horse. It's a goddamn Clydesdale. And he's just in the whole everything. He's
But that's this whole movie is, I think that's why part of why it's enjoyable is that every character is a character. Like Jennifer Tilly is such, like, her voice and who she is such an extreme character. You know, yeah. Richard Dreyfuss as Jay Trotter is an extreme character. Buster Poindexter is an extreme character. They're all right. they're all playing the extremes of who they are, and you know, they're ridiculous. It's kind of like a Saturday Night Live skit where you know like Wayne's World or something. They all have their own idiosyncrasies and sayings and so behavior.
Definitely. I have a question for you guys. You remember the dude, the giant dude who's like selling space at the front fence? Mm-hmm. Do you recognize him? Like what? I as soon as I saw him, like, oh, I know who that guy is.
Kind of, but
I didn't look it up, but I can't place him. I don't know who I can't figure out what I know him from. I know him from something, but nothing didn't ring any bells for you guys.
He looks familiar, but I can't think of it.
I saw him too, and I thought I had the same thought, and I didn't bother trying to look him up. I was like, well, you know, I'm expecting him like to show up in Commando or something like that, or you know, or one of these other. Aren't a predator or something as the guy who has a gun and gets killed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right though. Everybody's a character, but they're relatable. They're all people, you know, you would meet at a track. I like that. Looney, who always messes up. He does one of those. He's always, he grabs the Daily Double, which is like 18 months old. You know, it's not even the current races. Some guy hawking these. Everybody's scamming everybody, you know, but you should know better. If you've been in the track, you should know better. And then he bets on the horse named Junebug because it's the same name as his cat. You know, and that's something that people do because they don't have any, you know, really way of knowing what's good. They're not handicappers. And there's people that do this professionally. And then there's everybody else. So it's also kind of like getting through that thing, like ordinary people should be, well, they do win, but they don't win a lot or very often or very much. I guess that's what I like about it. I guess I like the whole, disclaimer, I am a Chicago Cubs fan. So until recently, that was the mark of a loser. I mean, that was, you know, the mark of an underdog. You know, seriously, that's a butt of the joke. It's in tons of movies that they're born losers, that they're never going to win. And so that's kind of his character is that guy. He's like the guy who never has his big break, but this is it. This is his moment. I'm hearing weird noises. Are you guys still on?
Yeah. I'm here.
Your phone ringing or something.
Hope it's not me. one more quick thing about, I think we talked about, we talked about Richard Edson. We talked about the Mamas and Papas. There's one musical thing there. Richard Edson, the Ferris Bueller dude, was the original drummer of Sonic Youth. I had no idea.
What? Really?
Random. Wow. No idea what happened with that, but... the music itself is Giorgio Moroder. I'm not really familiar with him at all, but I really like the beginning song from Guys and Dolls. It's the horse. I got the horse right here. You know,
It
really is a nice setup, and they come back, they kind of pull that in the credits.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it reminded me of something that my wife pointed out when we were watching it or after we watched it. She said that Let It Ride really felt like it could easily be a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and I gave it some thought. I was like, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, imagine if the audience is like the racetrack.
Right.
You know, and so the cast is always facing the audience and they're always watching you and there's sound effects going and they're always watching you and shouting. Like, I really think that would be an interesting play to see, Let It Ride on Broadway.
Yeah. Right.
And you're right. And then that, you know, the music sort of like made me, you know, also sort of reinforces that idea I'd be curious to see, you know, someone with some imagination, see what they would do with that.
Yeah, I mean, if The Lion King is the best musical of all time or something, then I'm sure they can do something with this. That's pretty good. I don't know how they do. I've never seen it, but I can't.
I've never seen it either.
Musical. Just, I mean, it is already musical, but I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm sure it's good.
I figured out who the guy is. or okay. where I rec I not who he is. I know where I recognize him from. It's obscure horse shit that no one cares about.
But, oh, we love obscure really shit.
But have you guys ever seen a movie called Rapid Fire with Brandon Lee? He made before The Crow.
Nope.
I'm aware of it. I don't think I saw it.
It's pretty good. I love it.
Okay.
That's no standard.
That's not an endorsement anymore.
No, exactly. You shouldn't take that with anything but the biggest grain of salt.
I think maybe it's like a mistaken identity.
He plays like a big bad guy that Brandon Lee kicks the hell out of.
Okay.
In Rapid Fire. It's a good movie. All you listeners out there, or if there are any listeners out there, I don't know. Rapid Fire is really good. They steal entire sequences from old Jackie Chan movies, and for that alone, I give it kudos.
They steal, or is it homage? What is it?
Well, I mean, I guess it just depends on semantics, how you want to look at it, but there's some pretty shot for shot theft going on of some of the major sort of set pieces in Rapid Fire. So I'm sure they would say it was homage. Anyway, that's who that guy is.
Nice.
Which means, again, not he's nobody that anyone has ever seen in it, except for me.
So, just to make it clear, once again, you are recommending a fight movie.
I am. There's a fighting in that movie. Sooner or later, I'm going to pick a movie to review that has zero punches thrown.
I doubt it.
I'm thinking about it.
We've been talking about Glengarry or Glenn Ross, so
yeah, there you go.
Is there a punch in there? It might be a punch or two.
I don't think there is.
Okay.
There should be.
Going back to some of our questions that we always like to answer, one, is it suitable for kids? I think it totally is. I think there's a little bit of swearing, and the nice thing was that they decided not to shoot the scene with Jennifer Tilly's breast popping out, which was in the original script. And then in the scene when she's up against the fence, they're cheering on the final hot to trot.
And, come on baby,
right, and things are bouncing a little bit. They're supposed to pop out right there, and she didn't want to do that, and so they changed the script to leave it that way. That's which good. Probably would have changed, you know, kind of the rating, or potentially so that wouldn't have been worth it. And the other question, you know, is it worth going back and watching? I think if you haven't seen this movie and you want to be amused, it's better than a lot of things out there right now.
In that regard, I watched it at my in-laws' house. They were kind enough to let us sort of commandeer the television for the night last night and watch this movie. So it was me, my wife, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law really liked it. She thought it was funny as hell. And my father-in-law hated it. He hated it. Every second of it, he's like, why are we watching this crap?
Maybe he doesn't believe in the concept of fate or luck or anything.
Fortune cookies,
right?
Yeah.
But I think that's part of it is that, I mean, so he talks about God, but it's really, there's a moment in the end. Well, you know, the final, there's a lot of crap happening in the final race. And it starts with him yelling at David Johansen, his buddy Looney. Looney's like, I bet you swore to God something secretly. And he goes, you ignorant bastard. Who do you think you are? Jimmy Swaggart? You know, this is a horse race, for crying out loud. So, I mean, he really pushes back against that. Like, I mean, he does first pray to God at the beginning or whatever his version is. And by the end, he's like, nah, it's a horse race. You know, and he kind of comes to the conclusion that he just has to let get out of the way and let fate take its course. You know, I mean, he's so convinced that he's going to win. He's like, I knew it, you know, before it's even happened. And then I also like that. I think we all know where, even if you haven't seen this movie, you're probably going to know where it's going to go. But yeah, his wife comes back to him. And then before he actually knows, he says, I bet it all, honey. And she goes, it's only money. So, right. You know, it's like, oh, well, I mean, it's all about money, but yeah, is it? I don't think to him, it really is. It is about money. It's really about him having his moment.
Yeah. And,
it feels like
he's owed.
He's owed.
Yeah.
But I don't.
That owed feeling is an addict's feeling.
Yeah, totally. Right, that sense of entitlement that comes with. Yep.
Yeah,
with losing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well as betting big on when you start losing. I mean, he's winning, but obviously when you lose a lot, you gotta bet a lot to get it back. You gotta, you know, break even and stuff. But, you know, Bernie's like, oh, I gotta bet 1,000 in this race. I gotta break even. You know, like, oh, geez, okay, how much you're prepared to lose? But I mean, it's also, yeah. And like we talked about the different like social, not classes, but just like the groups, the circles that he runs in. And I don't think it was not about class. It was not about any of that other junk. It's not a deep movie. It really, I tried to make it deep, but it's not that
deep. It's really, we're reading into it pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty, but it's definitely fun. And I would definitely, I can watch it, you know, not all the time, but I could watch it every couple of years. I could watch this.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. I agree too. I just want to go back to that big goofball who I said was in Rapid Fire. He was also in Fletch, and I'm curious if you remember him, because I love Fletch too, and I have seen it a fair number of times, but I don't remember it well because it's been many years since I've seen it.
Yeah, you're the Fletch guy.
I can't remember a really big guy in Fletch.
He was also in 16 Candles and Splash, but I don't know. I mean, these could be just like, you know, blinking.
Oh, 16 Candles. He might be the dad at the dinner, the in-laws, the grease. You help me out here. You know, so she's getting married to the bohunk, as they call him. And yeah. I think he must be the dad at that.
No, he's young.
Oh, he's young.
I found a still image where him and the main character, he's in like a gym with the heartthrob main character, the guy she ends up with, whatever the hell his name is, and they're like on a chin up bar together, the big dude and that.
Oh, yes. As soon as you said that, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was mixing characters, not Bernie, but the big dude.
Oh yeah,
he's a big football player or something, and they're doing chin ups, and they're actually not doing chin ups. They're standing there.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, good. That makes me feel better. That's definitely who he is.
How do you remember this stuff?
Going back, I don't know if we mentioned this, but I one thing I really love about this movie is when he places his second bet after he wins. You know, he gets the tip in the cab. You know, the tape from the cab. And then when he goes to place a second bet, he just goes out into the crowd, and there's that whole montage where he asks them all what horse they like, and then just scratches it off. Yeah. What horse you like? In the next, they're like, I like number three. Yeah. Scratches off. I like number three. Scratches off.
I always bet on a horse with front wraps.
Yeah. Right. And he listens to all these dipshits, you know, give their opinion on what horse will win and why, and then he just scratches off until he's left with just a horse that no one else mentioned, and he realizes that that's what he should bet on.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great part. That's a lot. People remember that part because they think about that when they're betting and how arbitrary it all seems. And
right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think one of the quotable quotes from this movie is when the ticket seller at the window, he mutters, he's like, guys have balls, and the cop behind him goes, and one of his is Crystal.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it's good. Good writing. I don't know.
Crystal. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you, Sam, it's your line. This is.
Oh yeah. Have we beaten this one? Have we beaten this one to death yet?
Yeah, like a dead horse.
Oh. Yeah. Oh no.
Sorry, I like horses. Don't kill your horses.
Don't kill your horses.
Well, I mean, this, I don't want to get into that, but it's a whole other thing about horse racing I don't like, which is how awful it is on horses. But we'll keep our light, airy mood going here.
I would say of all the horse racing movies there are, this is easily number one or number two. Well, that's the only competitor.
The Black Stallion, I guess.
I can't remember that.
Well, I mean, it's not a movie, but that show Luck on HBO got canceled because of their treatment of the horses. It's really terrible. Oh yeah,
that's horrible.
And BoJack Horseman. BoJack Horseman. I think he's treated well.
He's treated well, I'm sure.
All right. Well, what movie are we going to do next?
Oh, well, going off the farm animals, I am going to go towards the end of the end of our years, you know, between 1975 and 1999, and I'm going to go to 1995 and pick Babe.
Oh boy! You know what? I've never seen Babe.
Really? That's so awesome.
Never. Because I've never seen it.
I haven't seen I've resisted
because I always hated this trailer. I thought it looked ridiculous in all the worst ways.
Yeah. I can't remember.
This is going to be tough for me to sit through now. It better be good. All right, Babe. This is good.
That's good. Oh, making you get outside your box.
Totally.
Oh, yes. I wish I could film you watching.
All right, listen, there's just a slight preamble. I've always been fascinated by that the guy who directed the Mad Max movies directed Babe. All right. That's a discussion for later.
Yeah. Oh, hey, one last thing we forgot to mention is that we often say where you can watch the movies, and Let It Ride, I had to rent off of, you could rent it off Vudu or YouTube, and Amazon.
Yeah, I rented it on Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah, it was on Stars.
I couldn't find it for free anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think it was available for free without some kind of subscription or pay or rental.
Even the subscriptions, I couldn't find it on, you know, so I don't think it's on Netflix or Hulu or anything. I had to rent it. It wasn't Amazon Prime either. I had to pay an extra $2.99.
Well, I hope it was, you think it was worth it?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I think this review itself is probably our best review so far.
Oh, this is by far the best one.
Easily our best
review. I don't think we'll ever top it.
So maybe reaching for the stars. All right. Well, this has been Three Men in a Movie. Thank you for listening.
Adios.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.